Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Draft is brought to you by our club members and our site partners. You can check them out on our website and join the Post Status Club at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining nearly 450 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, WooThemes. WooThemes makes WooCommerce, the world's most popular e-commerce software, and you can get premium themes and extensions to make it even better. Post Status runs on WooCommerce, as do 30% of all e-commerce sites on the web. Check out WooThemes and WooCommerce at WooThemes.com. Thank you to WooThemes for being a Post Status partner. Now here's our show. Hey, everybody. I'm Brian, and I'm the editor of Post Status. Welcome to the Post Status Draft Podcast. Joe's out today, so I've got Brad Williams on the show to co-host with me this week. Brad's the co-founder of WebDev Studios, and he does a bunch of other interesting stuff that he can tell us about. Hey, Brad.
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
It's going well. So you tell people who you are a little bit?
Sure. Like you said, my name is Brad Williams. Co-founded a company called WebDev Studios. We do a lot of WordPress stuff. I run the Philly meetup group here in Philly. Also working on helping co-organize WordCamp US, which is pretty exciting. Written some books, do some podcasting as well. Dradcast, maybe you've heard of it. But yeah, just a really geek out over WordPress and love talking and doing all sorts of stuff with it.
Cool. Yeah, so folks that have heard this podcast probably have heard some podcasts that you've been on, and definitely, I'm sure, seen some of your work. So happy to have you on, filling in for Joe, who is... been traveling back from London and has other excuses that I'll forgive him for later.
Yeah, for sure. This is, I got to be honest, it's a little different podcasting first thing in the morning. I'm usually doing it in the evening, having an adult beverage.
Coffee instead of booze?
I think I might get judged if I was having a beer right now, so I'll stick to coffee.
I wouldn't judge you too bad.
Day drinking is very underrated, but
yeah,
that's a topic for another podcast.
And organizing conferences is hard anyway, but... one that's going to have 2,000 attendees is probably a different level.
It's it's interesting because outside looking in and all the WordCamp San Frans over the years, I've been critical in some areas and really positive in other areas, and it's now kind of being on the flip side of it. As an organizer, I've done co-organized WordCamp Philly for five years now, so I have that pretty understood, right? Pretty well down. But yeah, like you said, doing something at this scale, looking at 2,000 attendees. It's very interesting kind of seeing what it takes to put together an event at that size, which is a much different beast than a 400 or 500 person WordCamp.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about it, though. I'm going to be there for, I think, 6 nights, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm sure we'll make up for our lack of cold beers this morning at WordCamp US.
I'm going to hold you to it.
All right. So today we're going to talk about the WordPress core development process. And for the sake of Jeff Chandler and ourselves, of course, we're going to talk about term meta, which is a thing that's great for developers that's going into core. So WordPress 4.4 has so far been an incredibly busy release cycle. And Brad and I were talking a little bit before the show. Some releases really stick out as... having what you called a lot of developer goodies. And this clearly looks like one of those. It's certainly been active. Did you check out my notes that I pulled from the Make blog about how much stuff has gone in this release so far?
Yeah. And honestly, if I had to guess, I wouldn't have guessed it was that active so far. I mean, I'm not sitting in core chat every day tracking as closely as, some of the other people maybe out there, but I am kind of keeping an ear to the ground, right? So it's impressive when you look at some stats. And it's only been in development 6 weeks, is that right?
Yeah, 6 weeks. And the commit numbers are insane.
Just shy of 1,000 commits.
I would imagine since this was pasted in, we're well over 1,000 now.
That's amazing. I mean, it's really, I don't know if it's more people contributing, if it's growing. It seems to be trending that way, and it certainly seems to look that way. But it's crazy impressive just the feature list coming up in 4.4 that we know that will potentially be there, as well as just the amount of work we've seen in a 6 week time frame. It's exciting.
Yeah, I think part of it is, I mean, Scott Taylor has been the highest commit contributor, I think, a number of releases in a row. Mm-hmm. So of 1,000, he's responsible for hundreds. I know it's over 300. It's probably over 400. He'll probably correct me if he listens to this, because a couple of weeks ago I said there were 400 commits, and he, like, all caps fact checked me on Twitter about that and said there had been 800 commits, and I was actually looking at closed tickets. There were already 400 closed tickets, and now there's almost 500 closed tickets. And also, I mean, this is just to give people an idea of how much activity there's been. Track is below 3,000, or getting close to being below 3,000 tickets overall. And I mean, track has so many tickets. I think just tons and tons of stuff has been closed out and done what's called bug gardening, which is a fun activity. And, you know, we just wanted, and that's all in addition to the feature plugins that are happening, the big changes like term meta and comment rewriting and HTTP2 work and short code roadmaps, all sorts of stuff going on. So we wanted to talk about how all this happens and how the WordPress core development process works. And Brad, you've been contributing to core in some way or another and following along with the core development process for a long time, right?
I have, certainly contributing in a much smaller way than Scott.
That could be said about literally almost everyone in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I have some tickets and patches here and there. It's certainly fun to do. I've learned a lot from doing it, and you know, as part of kind of the book writing process, it's something I need to be very in tune with in terms of the process. It does kind of change over time. So in my books, Professional WordPress, I have a whole section about how you can contribute, right? So I talk about track and how you use track and work with it and patches and things like that. So it's important to stay up on. It's also kind of fun just to, again, kind of keep your ear to the ground and also see what's going on with some of these things. I mean, it's very easy to dive in and get involved, you know, even if you aren't a developer. You know, I think we've seen that a lot too, where just bringing your ideas and opinions can be very valuable. So. It's fun. I have some, it's one of those things, like I always say, yes, I should do it more. I wish I had more time and just sat down and dedicated more time to it. I think probably a lot of people are in a similar boat, but it's certainly fun. If you haven't done it, I recommend it. It's a great feeling when that you get something accepted, right? And it rolls into WordPress core. And you know, even if it's one line of code or one character, like you've made a change, you've made a difference in WordPress, you know, no matter how small it is.
Oh yeah, it feels awesome. I don't think I've had a release where I've had maybe more than like two props, and I've never really had props that were more than like a small patch, or maybe even got props for pseudocode from an idea. But it feels incredible either way, because you had an influence on something that changed for a huge portion of the web. So I'm going to do a quick shout out here and ask you to TLDR something for me. So you did write a great book on WordPress development, Professional WordPress. What's the long title?
Professional WordPress Design and Development.
Okay. And do you have like one of those give Brad a couple extra bucks links on the top of your head?
It's just bit.ly/prowp3.
Okay, cool. Right there. Yeah, so that's the... Anytime you have multiple editions in a book, it's a sign that the book is pretty successful. So go buy that book. That's always been the one that I think has been the go-to for really learning the real WordPress development type of stuff, like beyond user stuff. And so people that want to learn and get involved, do that. But can you kind of TLDR how you approach the contributing to development section for us? Because I want to get into more about like navigating the waters, maybe politically, and the best way to get your stuff in and that kind of stuff. But I'd like to give a briefer version that says, like, at a base level, this is how you get involved in core development.
Sure. So you mentioned Track, which is essentially the software that the WordPress community uses to track the development of WordPress, to track it, get it?
Core.track.wordpress.org. And actually, yeah, Track is a piece of open source software itself that WordPress has heavily customized.
Yeah, and actually a lot of companies use it for, you know, bug tracking for the projects they're doing, or even client work. So it's a nice, you know, kind of bug tracking software, but WordPress used this for as long as I can remember. Maybe they had something way before I got in, but They've been using it for a number of years now. And basically, track is a way that anyone can submit a what they call a ticket. And it can be an idea. It can be a suggestion. It can be fixing. Maybe there's a bug. It can be pointing out the bug. It can be as simple as just kind of, again, pointing out something or making a suggestion and not necessarily providing the code to make that change or that correction. Or you could also, you know, submit that fix or that change as a code patch, and kind of say, this is what I think we should do, and here's the code to do it. That's a great way to kind of dive in, to get into it. But there are a lot of tickets, and like you said, there's a ton of tickets in track where, you know, it's not developers submitting them, so they don't know how to fix them. But they have ideas, or they found a bug, or they found maybe a bad user experience that, you know, should be discussed because it just doesn't make sense. And I think that's where a lot of, a lot of the contributions you see are, which are, again, are extremely helpful, especially on the bug side. Anyone can discover a bug just by, you know, trying things. And if something doesn't work like it should, it's probably a bug, right? So helping report stuff like that. And once something's in track, then it's there's generally a discussion around it. If it's a feature suggestion or an enhancement, there's going to be a discussion whether it makes sense to be in WordPress core, right? What's the rule? If 90%, it's not really a rule, but a
80-20
guideline, 80-20. If 80% of the users, WordPress users in the world, would use it, then it should probably be in core. And again, it's not a rule, more of a, I guess, a guideline, right?
Yeah, and sometimes it's use or benefit. You know, it's not, everybody doesn't have to take advantage specifically, yeah, but it should benefit them.
Right. So, if it's an obscure thing that, you know, a very small percentage of people would ever need, it's probably not going to make it in. If it's something that's a common feature or a common, you know, need, then it could make it in. So that's when that discussion happens. And generally a task will kind of get, you know, quote unquote, blessed by a core developer of WordPress. And that basically means, yep, this will, once we get the code figured out, we'll put this in core. Getting that task kind of blessed is really the critical piece, in my opinion, right? Is getting somebody that is, you know, someone like a Scott, you know, on your side or with you on that, and kind of saying, yeah, when this ticket or this code is right, it makes sense to put it in core. And that means it's ready to go as soon as someone can submit the code to do whatever it is you're suggesting. So,
yeah. And as far as those stakeholders, I mean, anybody can, give their 2 cents on track, but mm-hmm. you know, there are only six or so active six lead developers, and then there's another probably less than 20 committers which can actually commit code in the end. So if you don't get somebody that can commit your patch, then like on your side, then it's going to be a little more difficult. And another group of people that you can go after are what are called like the component maintainers. So someone like Rachel Baker maintains comments and Jeremy maintains multi-site as a component. So every time you create a bug, you assign it to multi-site or comments or whatever.
Yep.
So getting somebody like that on your side to help you drive it forward is what's going to get it in. And that's all. That's been my tactic too. Is, you know, I could have a bug sitting in there for like a year, and I want you to talk a little bit about that time process and what to expect. But you know, if I really am passionate about something, then I might ping the component maintainer on WordPress Slack and just talk to them about whether they think it's viable, whether it fits in with the other stuff going on around that component. And if they think so, and yet there's not a lot of movement on it, then I ask them to kind of step in with me and help me drive it home.
Yeah, and that's a great point. To that point, that the core contributors, core developers are extremely accessible through Slack, which is the, if you're listening and you aren't familiar, is the basically the chat room that all the core development uses through, or the service they use it, which is essentially a chat room. So you can always ping people, drop messages in there and say, hey, I'm have this idea. What do you guys think? You know, is this viable? Does this make sense? Am I wasting my time here? And talk it out. And like you said, like if you're really passionate about a particular feature or bug or ticket, they have generally have weekly developer chats where, you know, the people that you want to talk to are going to be there. And it's a great time to bring up, potential tickets that you want to discuss and get some thoughts around.
Yeah, and it's one of those types of chats where you don't necessarily want to dive in for the first time and just go gung-ho on it. But you should feel, I mean, there's usually a period for an open floor where people can, you know, say, hey, what's the next step that I need to take on this pet ticket of mine?
They're very willing to help, especially if you're new to the track scene, to the contributing scene, because they want more people contributing and helping, right? So if you haven't ever contributed and you're kind of, you know, first getting in, and maybe it's your first ticket or first, you know, you're trying to write some code on someone else's ticket or something, they're generally, someone will step up and kind of take you under their wing and help you through the process, because they want more people to get involved. So it's kind of a neat process, to be honest. It's cool.
And on track as well, there were some changes made not too long ago where contributors or people, when they make their first ticket or their second ticket, there's like a little note at the bottom of the ticket that tells everyone else, like, hey, this is Brad's first ticket. Tell him congratulations, and, you know, try to help people welcome new contributors. And there is an effort to make it less scary. It is still scary. That's why we would talk about it on a podcast like this, to try to make it less scary, but yeah, it can be intimidating.
I mean, you're putting yourself out there. I think that's just, it's an intimidating process in general when you put yourself out to the public, whether it's a comment or especially if you're kind of putting code out there, right? Like getting past that hurdle of, you know, my code's not perfect, they're going to think I'm an idiot, you know, this can't be right, you know, that type of, it's hard to get past that if, you know, the first few times, because it can be humbling, right? You think you're a great developer, and you very well maybe, but you're also putting code against, you know, some of the best in the world. And, you know, you have to go in with that kind of mindset of, I want feedback, I want to improve, I want to learn. And any kind of comments and feedback I get, I need to use that as a, you know, an educational tool and learn from it. I mean, because if you go in the mindset of this, my code's perfect, and if you say otherwise, you're wrong. It's not going to work out well for you, you know?
Yeah, pretty much the wrong thing to do would be look at WordPress and be like, oh my God, this is terrible. I can't believe it's not all, you know, object-oriented. And
bring that up in chat.
make a ticket on track and be like, this is terrible. Y'all need to rewrite the whole thing. That's not a way to bring yourself in. A much more successful route is a little slower going about it, and watching and listening and seeing what the tone is, and then getting involved from there. But we've seen many times, and even from lead developers, Nason and Helen both had extremely rapid rises to become lead developers, because they got involved quickly but smartly, and they came in with a lot of knowledge of the core code base, and they put their head to the ground and did some work, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've heard Nason tell the story before. And I might get the time frame slightly off, but he something to the effect of, for the first like 6 months when he was kind of interested in getting involved, he didn't actually participate in track or chats. He just watched from the sidelines. Mm-hmm. until he really had a good idea of how everything was running and worked together. So he was watching all the tickets, he was watching the conversations, he was in the chats, but not really participating, just on the sidelines. And then once he really understood the process, he dove in and, you know, like you said, just, you know, 0 to 100. And overnight, everyone's like, wow, who's this guy? You know, which is kind of an interesting approach. So he kind of wanted to make sure he was clear on the process. And you have to remember, too, that this was years ago. So it wasn't as smooth of a process as it is today, I don't think. There weren't as many docs or as many people to help kind of hold your hand or guide you along. You know, it was much more of a kind of figured out on your own type of thing.
Yeah, and when I say rapid rise to the top, I don't mean 6 months. I mean, I think Nason got involved in like 2009, which is rapid in the sense of you started your business in, what, 2008, something like that?
Yeah.
And you've been involved longer than that. So for a lead developer, and having been a lead developer for years now, to getting started in 2009-ish, I mean, that's pretty fast to be then basically the most influential developer on the project.
Yeah, he really took off. It was great.
And then make.wordpress.org is where conversations happen that are more long-standing, so non-chat blog posts. This is where people document new features that are being considered. They create roadmaps for how to handle something. It's a great way to keep up makewardpress.org, there's actually like, I don't know, a dozen different blogs that you can follow. Most of the core stuff happens at /core. And you can follow along a lot of stuff there. It can get a little technical and complicated. That's why you should subscribe to PostStatus. I tend to take some stuff from the various Make WordPress blogs and try to decompress them and provide a little history to those posts. But it is a great way to follow once you are involved. And then that website also has two pages that are really important for people that want to get involved. One is the components page and the other is the features as plugins page. Can you tell us the difference between components and features as plugins?
So features as plugins is essentially the old way, I guess, maybe to put a little context around it, the old way to get kind of a feature in, a larger feature, was to, again, open a ticket, put together a patch, you know, so that you'd have to basically shove that new feature directly in the core.
And it would have to happen in like one release cycle or else it has to get ripped out.
Right, exactly. So the new approach, which is, you know, it's been going on for, I think a number of years now, is to actually build out that feature as a plugin, you know, in a way that, you know, you can essentially just to test the feature out and even to work on the feature, you can just activate the plugin, right? And then it does whatever it needs to do. The beauty of that is it's, I think, a little lower barrier to entry to do that, to build a plugin and or to help work on that plugin and contribute to it. A little bit easier than having as a core feature where you have to, you know, pull in that patch, test it out, you know, undo the patch, things like that, all through, you know, various command lines or GUI tools. But it's a much easier kind of process, right, to do that. And, you know, I think some of the more popular ones, what MP6 was... Was MP- it as a plug? Was it MP6?
It was the first.
The first, yeah. So and that was kind of the dashboard refresh was done
to the darker admin.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I think they tried to get it in the release cycle before, and it was designed by committee, is very, very hard. So having, you know, hundreds or thousands of people, you know, giving your design ideas around the dashboard refresh made it, you know, it was in core and they had to rip it out, like you said. And then that's when that plugin idea came. So that's what we've seen in the last year or two around larger features, because it helps them build it out over time. REST API, great example as well, which is more of a current topic or current feature, right? So it's a very large and complex feature.
And there are 11 of them right now that are listed as active features as plugins. And at any time, maybe 2, 3, or candidates for like the next release, so it could go 3, 4, 5 releases before getting the merge proposal, which we'll talk about once you go over components. But it allows for a lot of time to go into stuff, and it allows developers to figure out, is this truly a candidate for core? Because it might seem like a good idea before you start all the development, but then it isn't once you kind of dig deeper. And you can actually see the history of landed features and inactive features when you look on that. And some of those inactive features are things that sounded like great ideas, went down this road, and then it just kind of, they became not really the thing that needed to be worked on. So they kind of went into an inactive state, which is a lot better than ripping it out before the release or getting it into WordPress and then it being, having been not the best move.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's better, right? I think we can all
agree
it's
better,
because now the REST API has been out there for actually a number of release cycles, and it's been actively developed on its own, and it's being used by, you know, probably thousands of people at this point. It's being used on production. It's, you know, even you got to be a little careful, but it can be used on production. But it's out there and it's been tested fairly heavily, right? And things are going to change when it gets pulled into core, but you know, it's going to be a much easier process to get that in core versus doing it directly in core from the start.
And features as plugins are also a less intimidating way to get involved, because one, for the people that just like want to see their name on the contributor list, you do get props if you contribute to the plugin and it goes into core. The plugin contributors get props for the release that it goes into, which is neat. And also, there is one owner of each plugin, and then there's usually a small team around it, and there's always a much smaller, I mean, there's thousands of people paying attention to stuff in WordPress core, but there's usually no more than a couple of dozen that are paying a, you know, contributor level attention to any particular feature plugin. So you can kind of come under someone's wing and learn a lot and contribute a lot to a feature plugin. And the process is much like core, but it's at a, it's like all down to a much smaller component of the software. And then components, that process is a little different.
Yeah. So components, so we talk features as plugins. Components are essentially kind of, similar, I guess, in the sense of it's a large feature, but it's already kind of within core, I guess is a good way to think about it. So
right.
WordPress is organized into, you know, a few dozen components. And a component being things like HTTP API or media or, you know, plugins or the XML RPC. So like very specific features of core, large features, but very specific features. Mm-hmm. And then they have kind of leads or maintainers that kind of head up those components. So you can kind of dive into areas that might interest you. Like if you're really into cron, you could dive into and be part of the cron component, you know, if you're into that type of thing.
You just chose one that's like, you know, I'm sure so many people are really into.
Cron is so exciting, right? But, you know, and REST API is already listed here now. It's not in core. So I think the one ticket is probably to get it in core, right? But once that's actually in core, then you'll really see that kind of component really blow up because it'll essentially go from a feature as a plugin into a component of core.
That's actually a really cool one going on right now because the REST API component was just added to track. And it's a component you actually select with a ticket. And the current ticket is to put the infrastructure in. So listen to last week's episode. We went an hour and a half on covering that. But you can kind of, that's like the genesis of a new component and it goes from there. So each component has a list of tickets next to it that are active and you can see how much it's changed in the last several days. So the ones that have no change, maybe don't have as much going on, but like, I mean, some of them you can see a lot going on.
Yeah. This is the type of stuff that's really cool about kind of contributing to WordPress nowadays, like the kind of component piece, the make site that you mentioned earlier, like you can really dive into the areas that interest you most. And it's much easier to do than it was even just a year or two ago. So, you know, if you're mm-hmm. if you're more of a front end, less of a back end, then you can kind of dive into those front end, you know, type of components or features and focus on those. It's just a lot easier to kind of focus on the ones that you're passionate about or the ones that, you know, you have a nice skill set around.
Yeah, absolutely. And another neat note is if you're looking to make your first ever patch, there's even a tag for you that's called like good first bugs for new contributors. So under the main track page, you click on, there's a getting started section and it says, here's some patches that need testing. Here's some that need unit tests. Here's tickets without a patch at all. But a great one is good first bugs for new contributors. And it sorts all tickets based on ones that someone has assigned as a great bug to pick up if it's your first one, meaning it might be a relatively small fix and someone's there to help guide you through it. So that's a great way to get your first bug in or get your first fix in.
Or bug, however you look at it.
Yeah. You'll probably submit a bug with your fix. And then as your activity grows, I mean, me and you have been playing around in track for quite some time. So what I do now is actually I go to active tickets to see kind of recent stuff. And I go to my tickets because I've opened up several tickets over the years. And it's good to garden your own tickets. So if one that you've opened is no longer applicable, you can change the milestone so that it's basically inactive now. But you can see what your stuff that's in there and, you know, just kind of keep an eye on what you've been participating in. And I think it'd be fun to just spend a couple minutes. I just recently jumped in on a ticket that you've been involved in for years. So can you talk a little bit about like, hey, you got involved on that ticket. It's about, duplicate slugs and what that process has looked like for you so people can get an idea for what to expect with a specific ticket.
Yeah. And this one, might be a story on the more frustrating side of tickets. And ideas and you know, kind of fixing things. So I guess I'll give you some kind of context around what the original ticket was. So the idea is, if you've ever had a you know, a piece of content, a page or a post, let's say you have an about page, right, and you trash it, and then you create another about page. So you have one in the trash, right, and then you have a new one you just created. Well, WordPress is going to see that one in the trash and not let you have the same permalink, right? So you won't have slash about. It'll force it to be slash about hyphen two. And this comes up, my guess is we've all ran into this once or twice, right? Whether it's directly or from a client or a friend or somebody. And they can't for the life of them, or you can't figure out why there's a dash two on the permalink. And it's because there is the same named page sitting in your trash. Not obvious at all. WordPress doesn't tell you anything. So the idea is we needed to come up with either a way to swap out those permalinks, or some kind of a notification saying, hey, this is what happened and why it happened, right? So I dove into this ticket back in, it was like WordCamp San Fran Contributor Day like 6 years ago.
And this is an extreme case for people to know.
This is very extreme. So when I first, you know, I was like, oh, this looks interesting. This is one I ran into before. I'd love to help. So my first patch was like 6 years ago on this ticket. The ticket's still open. It still has not been fixed. So this has kind of become my like arch nemesis ticket that every WordCamp Philly Contributor Day, I work on this ticket. So about once a year, I revisit this ticket, refresh my patch, see what I can do to make it better. And push it back up. I think the challenge with a ticket like this is there's a lot of opinions on how it should be solved. It's not it's not a black and white, like, oh yeah, it should be this. Everybody has a different idea of how this should be resolved. Should you change the permalink? It's called a permalink for a reason, but should you change it because something's in the trash? Should you just give the notification of what happened so the user's at least aware and can make that decision? I've actually submitted patches for both directions. So this is one that probably, looking back in retrospect, it would have been better for me to take this topic and go to a dev chat and talk it out and have somebody make a decision, that is, you know, a core contributor, somebody that can kind of get behind it and bless it and say, this, if we go this route, this is what we're going to do and what we're going to accept. Whereas I've just been kind of submitting a patch or two once a year. So I haven't been the most active to get it resolved, but it is one that's, it's a good example, just one that needs to have a larger discussion around.
You know? And actually, I mean, did I help get a blessing on your ticket the other day?
So you, like, somehow this got resurrected by you like a day ago.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring that up, because what happens on these, and a lot of times why they last so long, is because you say, man, I want to change this. You make a ticket, if no ticket exists, to really account for that item. And then usually you get feedback that's like, well, that's there because of this. I mean, WordPress is 12 years old now, and there's usually reasons for stuff. So mine was, I hate going to a new site and the sample page is there instead of being like about and being people just edit the text on the about page. So I made a ticket to say rethink default install content, get rid of that dumb sample comment, you know, make the hello world post a draft instead of published, and change sample page to about so that people can get going with that. And someone pointed me to like a 6-year-old ticket saying they changed it from about to sample page or something like that because people were so often trashing that, creating a new about page, and then the slug would be about two.
There you go.
So this is what happens,
fixed.
Yep, you go to one thing, and then the problem ends up being another existing problem. So that sent me to your ticket. And so I spent some time thinking about, like, okay, I've seen this a lot of time. One of the most popular news websites in my state has a politics-2 category, and it drives me insane because it's in their post permalinks. So I see it every post that they do. Oh, and their business link category is the same way. It drives me crazy. So I sat and thought about this for a little while, and I basically proposed a solution, but it's after 6 years of activity, and it was like not the same solution that you had patched a couple of times. So I felt bad, but that's what happens on a ticket. Yeah. You know, like sometimes they just need to marinate for a while, and you know, someone comes along and gets excited about it again, and you reintroduce momentum, because momentum is one of the most important things in core WordPress development.
It is.
So that is basically...
Thanks for dusting it off. Now I go back and take my patch from 5 years ago. And
it is ready for your magic at WordCamp US. Contributor Day awaits you.
This is one I will celebrate when this one... I don't care if it's me or somebody else, but when this one gets resolved and closed, it will be a... It'll be a special day, because this is the oldest ticket I've ever worked on and been involved for 6 years now. And it's kind of my nemesis. I work with Eric Lewis. I think the last two or three WordCamp Phillies, him and I kind of sat down together. And he's like, every time he just cracks up, he's like, oh, it's this ticket again.
Yeah. So, I mean, people shouldn't get discouraged because we're talking about this ticket. But do know that tickets can take multiple release cycles. Others will go in and get fixed in 3 days. It just depends. But... you know, track has a long history, and getting involved is something where patience is a necessary skill. But I really think people should get involved, and I hope that you do. So go to make.wordpress.org/core. It has links to track. It has links to a lot of these things we've been discussing, the plugins as features and all that stuff, features as plugins and components and all that stuff. So definitely do that. And that's basically how the core development process works. And, you know, also sit in on the Slack channels and stuff. And, you know, this makes you a better developer. Y'all commit 5% of your company time to core development these days, right?
Yeah. Well, we contribute 5% to open source and just contributing, right? So if you want to, you know, it's kind of open. If they want to contribute,
if you want it to be core, it can be.
There's, you know, we have some people that contribute by organizing meetups. So it's, yeah, giving back, but yeah, there's certainly a number of people that are contributing. Another, quick point to make is contributing to WordPress is fun. And it could be a challenge because it's a very, it's a largely used piece of software. Obviously there's a lot of people working on it. Sometimes it can be hard to find a ticket or a patch that's kind of at where you want it to be, or something that you feel like you could contribute to. I've, over the last few years, kind of shifted, and I contribute more to like BuddyPress now, because one, it's a smaller contributor base. It's obvious. It's also a smaller set of people running it. It's much easier to get code into BuddyPress than WordPress, really, is what it comes down to. And I've enjoyed working on BuddyPress over the years, so... The last few contributor days, I have kind of worked on this patch a little bit, but I've also contributed and had quite a bit of code pulled into BuddyPress. So look at some of the other projects like BuddyPress, like BBPress, some of these other kind of larger open source projects that are still WordPress related. And it might be interesting to you as well to contribute to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. And the other thing to note is some features as plugins and some of these side projects that you're talking about, they follow very similar development flows as WordPress core. They kind of learn from the way WordPress core does it. However, they tend to be faster. And some of them also, if you're scared of track, some of them do that stuff on GitHub. So the features as plugins page, especially, like, it links off to GitHub if the development's happening there. And so you can find out a little more that way. If you're like stuck on GitHub, you don't want to do anything with SVN and patches and the way it works with core, then you can choose one that's on GitHub if that's your thing. But yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, and those projects are hungry for contributors too. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people have really gotten their feet wet working on one of those projects.
Yeah.
So we're going to spend the remainder of the show talking about term meta. This is one of your pet things. This is also the result of a 2-year roadmap. We talked about people creating a roadmap of like how we're going to handle X in over the next several releases. That happened over 2 years ago. Nathan wrote one of those right after WordCamp San Francisco. I remember it because I wanted to put the link on PostStatus, and I was like going on vacation about to drive down Highway 1, but I did it anyway while we were renting a car. And since then, every release, there's been something going on with term meta. And I've called the most recent three releases the three-legged stool of working on term meta and things that had to take place, or working on taxonomy stuff, so that term meta could be possible. Because term meta has been difficult for a long time. Now, it's landed. And can you give us a brief introduction of what it is, and then also why it's why you think it's important?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and speaking of tickets that have been open for a long time, this
Ryan, Ryan McHugh opened it when he was 14, I think.
So there is hope. Six-year-old ticket that was just closed 5 days ago. So yeah, so term meta, or the probably the best misspelled word out there, which is term meat, which I spell all the time. It's great. So metadata, right? It's the idea of arbitrary bits of data attached to other data or content. So the easiest way, I think the easiest example is if you think of a taxonomy like your categories or your tags, you know, the core taxonomies that ship with WordPress. So imagine categories, and let's say you want to add some data to those individual categories. You have like a news category and maybe an entertainment category, and hot topics category, whatever. Let's say you want to add like a featured image to those terms. So you have a nice picture of news, you have a picture of entertainment. So on your templates, you know, it kind of displays those featured images for your category terms. How would you store that data against a term? That's the challenge, right? There's no, up until now, there's been no kind of optimal way to do that. There's a lot of workarounds that you can do. So you could, we've done where we register a CPT, kind of a behind the scenes hidden CPT, just to store metadata for taxonomy terms. There's also, I have a blog post from a number of years ago that I wrote where you could attach metadata in the options table. So if, and it's obviously for a much smaller amount of data, you wouldn't want to have like a million entries. But if you have a limited set of terms, it works very well where you could just attach IDs or whatever it may be to terms in the options table. So there's been a lot of workarounds over the years, but it's not really the right way to do it. It's just like adding metadata to a custom post type. So the idea that you can attach arbitrary bits of data to terms, taxonomy terms, is super exciting. And one that I honestly wasn't sure if it was ever going to get in. So it's really, really happy to see it coming into core now.
Yeah, there were a lot of really interesting conversations around term meta. And I mean, what makes it needed, and, how you have to achieve it, and there were serious technical limitations to getting it in there. So classic example of this, you mentioned categories, but another might be, say you have a post and you want to be able to filter posts by like state that they're related to or something, and you want to say more than Pennsylvania or Alabama. You want to have a couple of pieces of information that are on that page. Like you click on Alabama, like you want to say, what's the population? What's the square footage? How many counties are there? Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of little pieces of data, not necessarily full post stuff like big long text, but some things. That's what typically, or a picture of the state of Pennsylvania. Featured images for terms is a huge one. That's the type of stuff that would go into term meta. And that's why we've wanted it for so long. This is so common in client sites. And it's just been a long road, because there had to be massive database changes, especially from the term ID to the term taxonomy ID, which were not the same. Are you familiar with it down to that level?
Yeah, so, and this kind of goes back to, and now we're really going into the geeky side here. But
that's okay.
This goes back to the last couple releases where, if you were following along, they had, prior to that, terms could be shared. So a term, you know, if you had a news category term and a news tag, in the database side, that term, it would actually be shared between the two taxonomies. Now, in the last few releases, there was kind of a slow, I think it was over two releases, correct me if I'm wrong there, but there was a bit of a rollout in terms of splitting those to be unique terms. And what that has allowed is things, you know, that fixed one of the issues with term metadata, because if you're sharing terms and attaching metadata to it and it's a shared term, it gets into a very kind of sticky, confusing area, right? Mm-hmm. So now that all the terms are split, it makes that much easier. So yeah, it's basically kind of attaching metadata against those term IDs. And like you said, it's making a new database table, and WordPress doesn't make database tables often. I think the last one I can remember is comment meta. So, you know, it's been adding meta to the various areas of WordPress. But that is the proper way to do it. It needs to be in a separate table. But anytime you introduce a new table in WordPress, that's a big deal, you know?
Well, so. Actually, it's going to be the elimination of the table, right?
Term, is it? My understanding was term meta is going to be a new table.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So term meta will be new, but there will be there should be an elimination of a table as well.
Oh, okay, so it'll be a wash. So I think it'll take us up to 12 tables for a bit, and then I guess back down to 11, I think we're at.
Yeah, it just requires a migration of one of those tables, and I don't think it's going to happen quite yet, but...
It'll probably be one of those rollouts like links where they would never delete the table, but they'll stop creating it at some point, you know?
Yeah, well, most of the information has been fixed at this point. So in 4.1, the three legs, 4.1 was when the shared term stopped being created. And then 4.2 is when the split, that's the two release thing that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. They started splitting shared terms in 4.2. And in 4.3, when a site upgrades to 4.3, all the existing shared terms will be split. In 4.2, it was just when they were updated. 4.3 was like, take all the existing ones and update them. So, with 4.4, there's actually going to be some conversion stuff happening too, because there's already existing term meta stuff out there, like plugins and stuff that are handling it. So there are several plugins and potentially custom implementations where people might have like not prefixed their functions right. So the functions that WordPress are now using to handle term meta were also potentially used by the plugins. So Boone Georges, who has been like the hero on term meta, made this big list of potentially conflicting plugins, determined which ones actually have conflicts, and is contacting the authors or helping them update personally, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome that they're kind of being a little proactive on that versus...
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, nobody reads, right? So all these plugin developers, they may or may not see it. They may or may not care. So it's nice that they're being a little proactive and kind of tapping them on the shoulder and saying, hey, this is going to break, you know?
Yeah, and this is a really good one, too, that is going to require outreach. So people listening to this podcast are paying attention. If you're listening to a podcast about term meta, then it's partly your responsibility to talk to other developers in your area. So bring it up at your meetups and stuff like that, and just talk about term meta and make sure people check their client implementations, because that's the biggest potential for breakage. It's not actually distributed plugins where, you know, there's opportunity to contact those plugin authors, get them updated, all that kind of stuff. It's custom implementations where people didn't use good practices, mm-hmm. and they're going to break. Now, most are not going to break, because most, the new term meta methodologies will just be new, but your old ones will still work. So if you've got a bunch of term meta in the options table, that stuff's probably going to still work as long as there's no big conflicts.
Yeah.
But if you do have a conflict, then it needs to get fixed. So they're trying really hard to make sure no websites get, you know, white screen to death because of conflicting function names and stuff. Yes. But it's taken a long time to even get to this point, to where it's just a limited risk scenario.
It's such a big change. I mean, you undertake it, and I dug up that ticket you talked about. So they're actually the in terms of the tables, they're looking to merge the terms and the term taxonomy tables in the future after the dust settles kind of from this last release and splitting the terms. So, but it's such a monster change. Yeah, anything like that could potentially break not only plugins, because yeah, they can kind of scan the plugins in the repo and identify those to a certain degree, but they, you know, it's more of those custom builds that you mentioned. There's no way to do that, right? So there's no way to say there's, you know, 10,000 sites that are doing this way and their custom, you know, plugins or themes for that particular site. And that's where, you know, if you're building sites for clients or for whatever, you know, you need to make sure you're really testing these out to make sure nothing blows up. You might even want to think about reworking your process once this ends up in core. Like if you're using an options table, get it converted over to the new term, you know, meta table, or at least get it on the roadmap of what you're working on. So definitely want to keep a very close eye on if you're a developer, because this will have some kind of an impact.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting conversations that happened around term meta was about what makes terms different than posts now, which I really like that question because it's kind of questioning the whole premise. So I thought that was a lot of fun. Mm. And I actually put a list together about what's different between terms and posts. And I was curious if that's something that y'all have thought about, or how do you, at Web Dev Studios, how do y'all choose, or how would you choose now between, hey, should this be a post or a term?
Generally on the setup and implementation in terms of content and how we're going to build it out, we kind of use the approach of using taxonomies over metadata quite a bit.
Because querying by taxonomy data is easier.
Exactly.
Right?
So it's not just easier, it's much more performant. That's really the performance side of it's really the win, and it's all without getting too
right. That's what I meant.
It's very easier how the data is queried in WordPress, right? So you can imagine, you know, you have your post table, your post meta table. Those are, you know, the post meta table gets huge, right? Especially if you have a lot of data and you're storing a lot of meta. And the way the data is all the relationships within the database and how those joins work, it's actually much more performant to query and say, give me all the posts that have this taxonomy term. And we would make to the admin or the editor, they have no idea. Like the UI is still like, you know, different options that look like metadata, but in the back end, it's taxonomies. Mm-hmm. And it's just much more performant. So that's probably the biggest reason I would say is the difference is the way the data, the relationships between the data and how you query those and the performance between the two.
Yeah, a couple of interesting things based on that. One of the potential downsides of term meta is now, like post meta, people can obliterate it. So they can throw a lot of stuff at term meta. And, you know, a lot of responsibility comes with that type of power. And there could be similar struggles with dealing with term meta. Meta should typically be considered a storage component with a known post ID versus some type of like filtering component. Would you say that's basically a good way to put that?
Yeah, I mean that
about when metadata versus a more specific term is. Or post is,
yeah, and I mean with anything you can kind of manipulate it how you want, but that's that makes sense.
I outlined a few other differences because I thought it was just a nice little challenge. One is, like you said, the admin, they're different, and really terms are basically subservient to posts because a term really doesn't stand well on its own. It's going to, you know, 404 or something if there's no posts assigned to it, and it does best when it's related to another data type. Another thing is that terms in the database still don't have any date-based data. So if you have any need for creation and modification dates, then it'll probably be better served as a post type. And terms have no comment support. So if it needs comments, it'd be better off as a post type. And whether it needs to exist at the top level in the admin without some type of manipulation, you know, it would by default sit within whichever post types that taxonomy is supported by. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I mean, a description field in a term is exactly the same as post content. You know, they're long text fields, so you can put a lot of stuff in them. You can put 10,000 words in a term description field if you want.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, once term meta is in core, then most of those points you could fix through meta, right? You could have a date created and date updated meta field.
You could, but I mean, at that point, you might be better off.
I like the idea that they're separate. Again, the way the data is structured and stored is quite a bit different. Now, once things start merging the tables, they might get a little bit more in line with each other. Imagine. With custom post types, you could literally have a WordPress set up and have an options table, users, and like posts, right? and do everything through posts. I mean, you could do it. You could have your comments in there. You could have your posts in there. You could have your terms, everything, right? It's doable. But it's just, it doesn't feel right to me, right? I feel like some things need to be separate. They need to be different. They need to run differently. They need to be stored differently. And trying to shove everything into one single kind of data model, I don't think would benefit the project. I think it would hurt it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brad, my prediction here, let me know if you agree. With PostMeta, the big thing was, okay, how are we going to handle the UI for creating and managing PostMeta? And that's where tools like CMB, which y'all came out with, CMB2, and Advanced Custom Fields, that's where they came from, is a need to create a standard set of metadata that would exist on a post. That's now going to be a desire of people for terms. Mm-hmm. So I think this actually gives greater weight to the need for a Fields API that makes creating those types of user interfaces simpler. So I'm hoping that this means that once term meta's in, there's going to be a push for a proper Fields API in WordPress core.
Yeah,
what say you?
I would absolutely agree. It's going to be a very hard one to nail down, I think, because if you look at things like advanced custom fields or even like CMB2, they do a lot, right? They do a mm-hmm. lot. And that's probably too much for what would go into core. Like whatever makes it into core would be a very kind of slimmed down version of that.
Right.
It would probably take a while to get there. But yeah, I agree. Like, you know, I think that is in the future for sure. I would not be surprised if we see, there's been some initiatives. Scott Clark, I know, has been kind of pushing on. I think Helen's involved now. There's some, I think on the Make blog, there's some conversations about exactly that. And there's some code, I believe, up on GitHub that they're working against.
It's a feature as plugin currently.
So it's headed that direction. It's just a matter of getting a lot of people behind it and really pushing through, because it'll take a while. It's going to be a while to get it hashed out.
Yeah, it's going to need some advocates to really push for why it's necessary.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I mean, I personally think it's quite doable. And I think you can make a really good case for it. And especially now that there's one more, you know, object type that needs it.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see those projects too. I know CMB2 specifically supports taxonomy metadata now, but it's obviously doing it the workaround way. But there are helper classes that Justin has put together, and they're available on GitHub to do things like that. I Advanced Custom Fields might do that. It probably does. I'm not sure, but to see now those projects are probably going to update those methods to use the core method of metadata, right? So kind of doing it the correct way. So there's great projects out there now that people can use that we use on every single project we do, you know, has CMB2 involved, and a lot of other people use CMB2. It's a really cool project for doing, you know, metadata.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Cool. So did we do term meta justice?
I think so. Jeff will have to tell us if he explained what we're talking about, or if he understands what we're talking about. Maybe that's how we know we did it right.
Yep.
I'm excited though. It's a huge feature that's going into 4.4. All by all accounts, it looks like it's going in 4.4. I mean, it's
you know. It's committed. It would have to be stripped out at this point.
Yeah, for it to get stripped out, there'd have to be a big blocker.
That's not unprecedented, but you know, sometimes bugs do come in that just blows everybody's mind.
So by all accounts, it looks like it'll be in 4.4, which is awesome, because this is a really, really big one for devs. This is a huge one. Anyone that works on, you know, especially more complex sites, I think you mentioned earlier, you know, they're doing things like this now, but they're doing it in more of a kind of a hacky method. So it'll be nice to have more of an official way to do it, and people can start doing it this way. It'll be more performant, can get into the caching layers of WordPress and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, this was fun, and Brad, I really appreciate you
great.
Filling in. How can people keep up with you?
You can track me down on Twitter, WilliamsBA. We also check out Web Dev Studios on Twitter, because we our company's been doing a pretty big initiative for the past 5 or 6 months now, and getting our team involved in writing some really interesting blog posts, tutorials, you know, code snippets, just things they're interested in. And it's, you know, they're pumping out some really great content. And if you haven't seen it, just check it out, webdevstudios.com/blog. And if you follow the Twitter account, you obviously see those tweets, but it's some pretty neat stuff that they're pumping out. I'm learning a lot from those articles as well. So it's kind of fun to follow.
Yeah. I've really been loving it because it always gives me good stuff to link to in my member newsletter.
And we like you linking to it.
And I've been learning a lot from it. So I am a huge proponent of teams writing blog posts. And it's hard. It's a big commitment, actually. I bet if y'all do it like I've done it in the past, it's like you set aside, you know, one employee gets like half a day a month or something. Because some people, it takes a lot longer to write a blog post than others. And yeah, if you get technical on something, like you're writing about WPC CLI or like something more technical, you're going to have people reviewing it. Like there's a lot of time that goes into something like that. So I appreciate y'all doing that.
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of just kind of going back to that point of getting comfortable exposing yourself a bit, right? And sharing code and your knowledge. And it's not to say that's 100%, you know, the one and only true way to do it. And it's, you know, 100% the exact way. Like it's a good learning process for our team that maybe isn't, some of our team members maybe aren't out there as much or pushing code. Like they're getting some experience doing this and sharing their knowledge and things they're passionate about. So it's pretty neat. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Also be at WordCamp US. You said you'll be there. I'm one of the co-organizers. I live in Philly, so I have no excuse. I will be there. So if you're going to make it to WordCamp US, definitely track me down and say hi.
Awesome. I assume WebDev is hiring as well.
We are hiring. We got some front end and back end positions. They're all on our website. We're actively doing a lot of interviews right now. So if you're interested, check it out. Get those resumes in. Love to chat with you.
Cool. And as a bonus feature, WebDev was a big supporter of PostStatus. So you might be able to wrangle Brad into buying you a PostStatus membership if you join WebDev Studios.
Yeah, man, we definitely love what you're doing. I've just seen all the feedback from the community, which has been extremely positive. Everything I've seen and everything I've experienced has been great. I mean, between the newsletters and the chat room and the podcast and everything, it's a nice package. So it's really cool to see what you've built here.
Thanks, man. Glad you're liking it. Everybody, check out WebDev Studios and look forward to talking to you next time.
See ya.